working hard at a New York job, making dough, but it made me blue. One day I was crying a lot, and so I decided to move to West Covina, California. Brand new pals and new career. It happens to be where Josh lives, but that's not why I'm here.
She's the crazy ex-girlfriend.
What? No, I'm not.
She's the crazy ex-girlfriend.
That's a sexist term.
She's the crazy ex-girlfriend.
Can you guys stop singing for just a second?
She's so broken inside.
The situation's a lot more nuanced than that.
C-R-A-Z-Y.
Okay, we get it.
Crazy ex-girlfriend.
Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and joining me tonight, one of our resident STVD All-Star Squad members, it's Jason.
How you doing tonight, Scott? I'm so used to you saying Dan that it kind of throws me a little bit when you introduce my name instead.
Yeah, it's an interesting phenomenon that happens occasionally. It happened a lot last year when I would have someone filling in for Dan or just doing a podcast that he wouldn't be participating in because it was a show he didn't watch or something. But like this one, the one that we're here to talk about tonight, which is once again, of course, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Yep. As the last episode, it's the last of the three that we're doing this year on the show. And so next season.
Yes. Presumably we will tackle this again next season, assuming there's even still a podcast at that point. I should mention that, referring to our previous two podcasts, those who listen will recall that we sang the original theme song in our first podcast, and we used the season two theme in our last podcast. It occurred to me when putting things together for this one, we've never actually used the original season one theme, so that was why I went that way this time around. Also kind of felt it was oddly appropriate because, and we'll get to that eventually, but because not only did the season finale actually not feature an opening theme song, we also know for absolutely sure there will be an all new theme once again next season.
Yeah.
But as I said, we may or may not be mentioning that later in the podcast, though I bet we will probably totally forget about it, because that happens half the time whenever I say, we'll discuss something later in any podcast that I seem to be recording here. So, like you said, we are finishing up the second season of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, talking about those final three episodes. And when we get to that finale, we can then talk about how we felt about how this entire season wrapped up and how we think it's going to move forward.
Yep, I agree. That sounds good to me.
Yeah, hopefully hopefully I didn't just jinx this again with that nonsense I said about forgetting stuff that we mentioned in the opening of these things.
What are we here for again? I forget.
We are here for Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right.
So let's get the party started with the 11th episode of the season, which was Josh is the Man of My Dreams, right?
That sounds like such a question, you know.
Yours, and that's okay. I'm not your best friend of that, I'm pretty sure, but I'm okay. Friendship doesn't have to be a two-way street, as long as there's a car on the road. Friendship doesn't have to mean a shoulder to cry on, I don't need a shoulder to cry. Oh, I'm just kidding. You're my best friend, and I know I'm not yours, and that's okay. Your best friend is somebody else, but I get it. Completely get it. A little from you is like a lot from someone else. Six of yours beats anyone's dozen. That's why I love you like a sister, and you love me like a second cousin. You're my best friend, and I know I'm not yours, and that's okay. That's okay. I said it's okay. Really.
Now, in this episode, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend makes the case for some serious climate control as the Santa Ana winds blew into town and seemed to wreak havoc like some sort of evil cartoon Cupid. So even though Rebecca's just gotten engaged to Josh, Nathaniel is literally becoming the man of her dreams, and things get even more uncomfortable when they, of course, get caught in an elevator. Those devil winds again. This leads Rebecca to go a little, well, you know, crazy, and pay off another bride-to-be just so they can move up the wedding date to just 2 weeks away. Now, while that's the main focus of the episode, there's also a nice subplot addressing the friendship between Paula and Daryl, which culminates in that sweet little song you just heard a few moments ago. Now, Jason, I gotta be honest with you right off the bat. This was an episode that I really did not love the first time I watched it. I sort of kind of hated the whole Santa Ana Devil Wins thing. I mean, I appreciated the idea of kind of doing the 60s Frankie Valli, if he was castrated, singer thing, and making like the Santa Ana Wins, you know, this omnipresent narrator. But when I saw it the first time, it kept taking me out of the episode, you know, which this show, that when they do musical numbers, that usually doesn't happen. But, and I remember when I watched it, like, I even had to put the captioning on because I couldn't understand what the lyrics he was singing were because he was singing in such a high-pitched voice the whole time. I mean, what was your opinion on that episode?
I thought it was an interesting device that they used. I wouldn't want to see that all the time. It was a style of music that I don't think they've had yet, the Frankie Valli style, but if they wanted to do it that way, I guess this was a way to do it. Well, it didn't work out. I wouldn't say so completely.
I don't mind the singing style. I just didn't like the entire idea overall. And sometimes I'll defend an idea if it doesn't work, because I was like, oh, at least it was like a, you know, it was a worthwhile, you know, a brilliant failure or something, or a worthwhile experiment. I just didn't care for it. And the real reason why is I personally don't like having some sort of oddball, mystical, magical excuse for anything happening on the show. I mean, it's one thing when they make a bit much of a bizarre fake butter advertisement, you know, but that was more like what's going on in her head. But this felt a little bit too much for me. So As a result of that, it kind of colored to a certain extent all the scenes involving, you know, like Rebecca and Nathaniel. Although I did really love poor George deciding to leave them trapped in the elevator, and then Nathaniel turns out to be a Harry Potter fan too.
That was pretty good, and it's the one time to actually remember his name.
Right. Well,
at the end.
Oh yeah. Okay. Okay. Making sure we're clear about that.
Yeah.
Now I should also now say, because I rewatched all three of these episodes before we podcasted tonight, watching the episode a second time, I did warm up to it more. And I'm thinking it may be because of watching it in the context of the other episodes makes certain things about it work a little better for me. I still don't love the whole Santa Ana Wins thing, but I was better with it the second time around. You know, I mean, I did like the fact that they blew open her blouse at one point. So the winds had that going for it, you know.
I get what you're saying about the mystical nature. It is something that they haven't done before on this show, so it does seem kind of forced in towards the end of the second season.
Yeah. But, you know, that I think for me, the things I liked more, even the first time around with the episode, I really liked spending time with Paula and Daryl in this episode. I thought that was kind of a nice change of pace for the show, actually.
Yeah, and the song, You're Not My Best Friend, that's actually the best song of the whole episode, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's why we used it.
and it does kind of speak to real life relationships that people have. I mean, there are people out there that have that kind of relationship, like You're Not My Best Friend, but that's okay.
Oh yeah, it would be nice if all relationships were always on that equal playing field, equal level. But quite often that's not the case. You're always going to have friends that you may feel closer to than vice versa. You know, here's the thing. It's okay with friendships, but it's not okay with, you know, relationships. No. Relationships is where it'll kill you. But if it's a friend, I mean, look, I've assumed any number of friendships that I've had have been with people who probably merely tolerate me, quite frankly. But I did like the fact that it addressed something that you never really hear people talk about. But it's, like you said, it's very true.
Mm-hmm.
And I like just them dealing with this, because up until this relationship between these two characters, because before this, while of course I enjoyed the scenes or interactions between Paula and Daryl, this just made it a little less goofy sitcom-y than it might have been in the past. It gave it just a little bit more weight, just a touch more reality than they normally have with those two together. And I think it really helps this episode, and I think it'll help future episodes as well.
Correct. It gives it gravitas, and it doesn't make it seem so slapsticky.
Yeah.
And, like, Daryl's always chasing after Paula, and Paula just kind of brushing him aside.
Yeah, but I really enjoyed their scenes in this episode. There's a lot of really great lines, and, you know, Daryl just comes just close to being just someone you want to smack if you were Paula, but he becomes so lovable or nice or sweethearted, you can't do it. Even if he is practically eavesdropping and stalking her all the time.
Injecting himself where he's not needed.
Right. Beyond that, I mean, there were some things that stood out during the course of the episode that were either funny or interesting or annoying. Did anything kind of scream out at you before I mention a few?
It's a CW show, so we almost had one of those CW things that we've mentioned in past podcasts about relationships being forced upon each other, like Nathaniel and Rebecca this episode. That's something that you could kind of see coming down the road from when they first introduced him. But they had to use the whole Santa Ana Wins plot to drive that forward. So that was one thing. However, I did like the song that they did. It was kind of nice.
See, I don't see my problem with their relationship isn't, I don't find them being attracted to each other in that actually quote unquote contrived, other than the fact they are, and they comment on it within the show itself. There is a lot of very classic rom-com stylings there, but on a show like this, you know, they're doing it deliberately. They're doing right. It almost to make fun of. So maybe one could even say that they've gone that step far further with the whole Santa Ana Wins thing. There's part of me that would have said, hey, you don't really need something that goofy to push this forward or whatever. But like I said, it works better when you watch the next two episodes.
It does.
That's why it doesn't become as bothersome, because it's her trying to deal with that and deal with the rest of the stuff in her life. I will admit though, initially the conversation in the elevator bothered me a little bit. Because initially it's really inappropriate because I mean, I know it's a comedy show to a certain extent, but when a boss tells his employee that they should just have sex, it's kind of going over a line, and someone who's a lawyer should really know better than to even bring that up. The show gets away with it by having her be the one to kiss him. So mm-hmm. they're able, if it had been the other way around, they'd be like, you kind of did something you shouldn't have done here. So they were able to skirt that issue pretty well.
Yeah, it was kind of inappropriate right. On his part.
There was a joke I really liked when I watched it the second time, when Rebecca is having a conversation, a little secret conversation with Paula about all this. And when Paula refers to, you know, just not waiting for him to whip his yuck out, and then Rebecca just keeps going on like, yeah, but I bet he has a big yuck, like a massive yuck. I wonder if I can even take that yuck. And I'm like going, oh boy, this show. It's like, okay, it ends in a CK, so they're getting away with it there. Also, there's that point in the kitchen with the container of coffee creamer kind of exploding in Rebecca's hand.
Yes.
I kept thinking it would have made more sense if it had still been in Nathaniel's hand when that happened. Unless we just look at since he handed it to her, it's still an extension of him, perhaps. But that was kind of like, oh, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, you don't need to really look too deep as to what they're symbolizing it.
No, that was there was no subtlety with that one. But as we will talk about in probably the next episode, you don't need to be subtle to be really funny sometimes. Sometimes you can be quite the opposite. The only other thing that I felt I wanted to mention about this episode before moving on, unless there's something else you want to talk about. And again, this is more about how things work in the context of the next two. Josh thanking Rebecca for inspiring him to get more involved with the church league, and so on. So they're planting the seeds very heavily here for what ends up happening by the end of the season, which we'll wait till we get there to talk about that. But I hadn't remembered that before when I watched it before. So,
right, and the arc that that Josh takes towards the end of the season really starts right here.
Yeah, I agree. It's very much like a 3-episode arc, and I like that it doesn't make sense to talk about it now. It's going to be in a later episode we're going to cover, but I like that there was something that I was almost going to, I hope they're not going to go down that road because it's so obvious. And not only did they not go down that road, they even pointed out as this is something that you think we're going to do because it's such the thing that normally would happen. That's not what we're going to do. But again, I'm prefacing something which we're going to talk about in the finale, so I should stop talking about that now. Anything else? Miss Hernandez spoke again, and she's still being nasty to Rebecca.
Yeah, I think that's going to be her thing now. Yeah. I think that her silent days are over with.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I was noticing when Rebecca was running around the room showing off her ring, she almost smacks Mrs. Hernandez in the head with her arm. So I thought she had a right to be pissy to her.
just like everything else with Rebecca, you know, she can't do being engaged quietly. She's got to do everything so over the top.
Right.
It's just, here's my ring.
But I would say that this is something that seems to be not... It wouldn't be something I would just apply to, like, oh, she's a crazy person for doing that, because I think I've seen more than enough people I've known over the years who kind of go a little gaga showing off their engagement ring or whatever. And especially considering she's... how much of her life has been devoted to this moment, quite frankly. So, we shall see.
Pretty much. But I think this is another scene where, once you know where we're going towards the end, it takes on a bigger context.
Yes, it does.
I think.
Oh, yeah. All right, well, let's move on to the 12th episode of the season, and that one was titled, Is Josh Free in 2 Weeks?
Tell me I'm okay, Patrick. Tell me, please, that's all you have to do. Just one little okay, and you'll be on your way. Patrick, I really need that from you. Tell me I'm okay, Patrick. No pressure, but I seriously need to know. I realize your occupation is not gentle validation, but just this once, Patrick, give it a go. You represent the outside world cause you don't know me. Your perception of me is completely pure. You don't have an agenda, that's why I need you to lend a hand, Patrick. Cause I think I'm fine, Patrick, but I'm only like 43% sure. Tell me I'm okay, Patrick, or even something in the ballpark would be nice. You can phrase it how you want, you can make it nonchalant. Forget the O, even just K would suffice. Seriously, Patrick, was I sick the day in school? They taught you how to be a normal person? It just feels like there's something fundamental I'm missing out on. Like, is there an instruction manual? You get what I'm saying, Patrick? It just feels like everyone is in this cabal of normal people, and they're all laughing at me like I'm the jester in my own Truman Show. Patrick, tell me what the secret is. Just tell me what the secret is. Is there a manual? Do you have the manual? I know you have the manual, Patrick. I know it's in your truck, Patrick! I'm sorry that I yelled, Patrick, but I need just a little more from you today. So Patrick, hear my plea, make one last delivery. Say the word, Patrick, tell me I'm okay. Am I okay?
Now in this episode, Rebecca is veering off the rails even more so than possibly ever before as she's trying to arrange her entire wedding on her own, a do-it-yourself wedding, which, you know, is, well, crazy. Now, Paula does try to pitch in. We do find out about a great phone shredding of Rebecca's mom. I wish we could have seen both sides of that conversation, quite frankly. And Valencia finds her true calling as a wedding planner. But the biggest sounding board for Rebecca isn't any of her friends or even her therapist, but the delivery guy, who is actually nicely underplayed by Seth Green. Meanwhile, there's still that bubbling issue of Rebecca's increasingly risky relationship with Nathaniel. Here we do see that they both have issues with their fathers. You know, we all know that Rebecca's abandoned her, and Nathaniel's has been pretty much a cruel taskmaster at best. And then it turns out to be Nathaniel who arranges to have Rebecca's long-gone dad flown into West Covina for the wedding. And to be clear, in case you couldn't tell from my description so far, unlike the previous episode that I was kind of so-so on, this episode is actually one of my favorites of the series. Not sure why I put that into the recap here, but I'm telling you anyway. Now, I will say right off the bat, Nathaniel farting and later crapping in his pants in front of Paula and Maya might be the funniest thing I've seen on TV this year. I mean, I'm a total sucker for humor like that, and that hit my funny bone like a crap-covered sledgehammer or something. And well, the other thing about it, which was nice, it instantly made me enjoy that character so much more than I had before. In fact, you know, it even kind of sort of made me relate to him to a certain extent. Because, you know, we've had those moments.
We've all had that problem at one point or another.
So let's really start talking about this. I mean, there's a lot to talk about with this episode if we choose to. So, I mean, just the insanity of Rebecca trying to pull this wedding off, and especially, I mean, the stuff with Seth Green I thought was really nice. That song, which you guys just heard a few moments ago, actually, because I chose to put it in the podcast. I think that song was about as perfect and wonderful as anything I've heard, you know, of that nature from even any Broadway musical. I thought it was really nicely composed, sung, lyrically, everything. It was really kind of a nice moment in the entire season, much less the show.
Yeah, I really loved that song. And, I don't know, it kind of served kind of the opposite of, gosh, I don't know what I was going to say, but anyway. Anyway, I agree with you about the song. It took me by surprise. You know, you kind of got like the Fabulous Baker Boys out of it when she's on the piano. Seth Green looked like he didn't really want to be there, as you know, just as his character. I forget what his name was, but
it's Patrick. The song is
Patrick.
Am I okay, Patrick?
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, they've been really doing some good jobs with the guest stars this year. Like from Patton Oswalt to Seth Green.
Right.
I've been impressed with what they've done. And you know, it's because the show is so damn good. People want to do it. You know, they don't have to go out hunting for people. People will come to them.
Yeah. It's nice to see that happen because we know that the show is not a quote unquote highly rated show, but it's got such goodwill and it's considered such a quality show that people would want to be part of it. I mean, because Rachel Bloom is such a talent and as well as the other people on the show.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about the fact that Rachel has no ideas for herself about this wedding. She just has to go out and steal someone else's idea.
Rebecca, not Rachel, but yeah. call her by her character, not by the actress's name.
You know what I'm saying. Rebecca has no ideas of her own about this wedding, even though it's something she's wanted to do forever and ever and ever.
Oh, so you're comparing her to like the Republicans and the Affordable Care Act or something? Before we move away from that musical moment, though, I just want to point out something that I did not notice upon my first viewing, but watching it the second time I saw it, and I'm wondering if people noticed this or not. They probably did, but in case you didn't, if you watched that entire musical number, as you remember, there's a part, at first, it's Seth Green playing the piano, and she's right on top of the piano. And then a little bit later, they switch places, and Rebecca's playing the piano, and Seth Green is on top of it. Did you notice what happened towards the very end of the song? It's very brief.
He laid down on the piano?
No. Well, he was already laying on the... They're both on the piano, and one of his packages is playing the piano.
No, I didn't see that.
There's a floating... If you go back and watch it, now that it's on Netflix, you can check it out right now. It's like a little floating package playing the piano. And I never noticed that before. It's like, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. It's so subtle, people might not have even focused on it and noticed that. But I really got a kick out of that. Anyway, what were you... I know I apologize if I derailed you from something before, but I just wanted to make sure I didn't forget that.
You didn't. You could tell that Rebecca is so overworked about this that it's just driving her crazy, even more crazier than normal. You know, she's out there, but she's frazzled, not sleeping, and it's wearing on her face.
Yeah, it's interesting is once we've gotten away from it being just about her being a little off or off kilter or whatever because she's obsessed with Josh or whatever, and now it's been transferred over to trying to get a wedding done. And if you've known people who are trying to get weddings pulled off, especially, you know, if things aren't going very smoothly, I mean, this is the kind of thing that can happen, except those people wouldn't choose to undertake trying to pull off an entire wedding on their own within 2 weeks. And then, you know, to the extent that happens here.
What did she call it? It's going to be a F wedding and a A-plus place.
F-minus wedding and an A-plus place. You know,
which makes it a C.
Right. And we all know a C is really an F. So,
yeah. Also the fact that Heather is the one that helps bring her back by involving Valencia, even though she's like, you can't do this on your own. And she goes out of her way behind Rebecca's back and brings Valencia in.
Well, first of all, the fact that Heather's in the episode at all, because it was like my first thought was like, hey, Heather's back, because she wasn't in the previous episode. But yeah, I really like when they get to use the Heather Valencia combination, because those are two very different personality types, and I really enjoyed the scene between them. You know, especially when Heather keeps asking for wines.
the plural of wines.
The plural was cracking me up. It's like little touches like that. It's like somewhere in the writers who thought of that, because I'm assuming it wasn't the actress herself. It's like, you know, this will be funny if she just keeps saying wines instead of wine, because wine, I need wine. It's not that funny. I hate wines. That's funny.
Also, another thing I like to talk about is how the parent issues are really brought up in this episode and how really messed up they are. And not just with Rebecca's family. It's also with Nathaniel's as well, who seems to spend so much time just being the uptight, go-getter type of person that his dad wants him to be that he ends up doing harm to himself by drinking that shake and getting sick. And once he has his nap, because hey, you know, he's right, naps are great. But his dad catches him, and his dad is disappointed. But Nathaniel doesn't seem to care as much. Did I read that wrong, or did you have the same thing?
I think he was still crushed by it. I don't think Nathaniel shrugged off the fact his father was disapproving of it. I didn't see that happen there, because he kind of went back to his normal self after that. I do agree. I mean, it's interesting. Well, they do something to also make us, well, for lack of a better way to put it, make us care more about the Nathaniel character. You know,
yes.
Because, and that's one way you do it. It could, you know, it makes you think about the song from a few episodes earlier, you know, who's the new guy? <You know? laughs> And are we going to care about this guy?
Nathaniel does something really nice.
Yeah.
By sending the plane to go get Rebecca's father, even though you still get the idea that Rebecca's father really didn't want to be there.
Right. I mean, we'll be talking a lot more about that in a few minutes in the final episode for sure.
And it's not just Rebecca's father, it's Rebecca's mother too. I mean, I understand it's 2 weeks, but you still make time for your kids.
I choose not to scold other parents.
So. I'm just saying that as a parent myself, that if my son later on in life says that he's going to get married in 2 weeks, I would do my best to be there.
All right.
No matter what.
Well, if you were a Jewish Long Island mother, I would actually give that some credibility, but you're not, so I don't care. Also, you know, we should mention another nice thing about the episode is kind of Valencia finding herself.
Yes.
And I like that because it's an interesting character development, because there's a character who, previous to this, her existence on the show has been all about her relationship with Josh, both pre and post. You know, because now, you know, the whole thing is about getting over Josh or being able to live without Josh. But even she had been saying she was kind of aimless. Like, she didn't really care about yoga anymore that she was doing it. She has candles there that have her own scent?
Yeah, she was doing it just to smell herself.
Yeah, lovely.
As she described herself in a previous episode, she was just eh. Yeah. And she even described herself as eh in this episode too, until she got the gumption to just take over the wedding.
Yeah.
And not just her wedding. It was actually her, it was not just Rebecca's wedding, it was her wedding that she was planning for Josh.
Yeah, which isn't,
it's kind of weird.
It's a little weird, but it in the context of this show, I thought it worked pretty well.
Considering so. It's only 2 weeks, you know, I guess you have to do with the game plan that you got.
Yeah. You know, otherwise, no, you don't have something called like a TV show. All right. So, hey, let's heck with it. The one I think we were going to spend more time talking about this than anything else. Let's get right to the season finale, which was titled, Can Josh Take a Leap of Faith? Now, in the season finale, Rebecca is obsessively overjoyed that her father appears to be back in her life, but in many ways becomes even more delusional about her dad than she's ever been about Josh. Meanwhile, a slip of the tongue after one of Rebecca's rather disconcerting dissociative episodes causes Josh to go off on a little bit of an obsessive track of his own, wondering who this Robert person Rebecca mentioned, and whether he can move forward into this marriage, or major mistake, as White Josh would probably say if we asked him. Because he's riddled with doubts that seem to have been unearthed by this unknown secret. Now, this all leads to a rather major turning point for both Josh and Rebecca's lives by the end of the episode. Even if it wasn't the one the couple thought it would be at the outset, or not exactly the one any of us thought going into this episode. Now, I gotta say, this for me, this was a big wow of a season finale. I mean, I expected a few good songs, we all expected some sort of a breakup, but I didn't truly expect it to feel both truly tragic and also, I don't know, almost kind of like chillingly powerful to a certain extent.
It got dark. It got dark towards the end.
Right.
Is what I thought.
So let's start off with the ending. And where this series, I think, goes now. I mean, Josh chooses to enter the priesthood rather than marry Rebecca. And I love that Josh apparently has priests and nuns confused, as he mentions earlier to Father Bra, choosing to marry Jesus. But, you know, as a friend of mine has repeated a couple times to me, maybe this for Josh, for all we know, this might have been more about him doing it for the cool t-shirt that he saw Father Bra wearing earlier in the episode.
Yeah, I think this episode was really interesting. As you said, it was something that I wasn't expecting, and you got more of a spiraling of not just Rebecca, but also as Josh as well. And of course, the crazy ex-boyfriend, I put that in quotes, you didn't see that. Trent is the one who sets Josh on his, helps set Josh off on his quest.
To an extent, yeah.
Once he had the Robert thing, and then Trent shows up with a packet, then he's really left with, what do I do?
Right.
And instead of, I guess you could say he punts, you know, he doesn't really choose one way or the other as to open it or not to open it. He kind of runs.
Right. Well, it's really, for me, a lot of this, it's just such a major moment for Rebecca here. I mean, it's interesting because initially, by the end, the fact that she tells off her father and essentially throws him out of her life, which, you know, is based on his actions throughout her life and right up until, you know, that very day, when it's become clear that he's really there more to hit her up for some money than being a genuine father. That's something she does, which you could actually say is healthy. It's the right thing to do. But when Josh leaves her, you know, and she's not just left at the altar, she wanders off and she's, you know, she's left on the edge of a cliff, quite frankly. It's a very literal manifestation of her mindset, if there ever was one.
Very much so. Once again, you don't need to understand the symbolism that you're seeing right there.
Yeah. And what's fascinating about those last few minutes of the episode, because that's when I think the show's title really kicks in, and the co-creators both have discussed this in recent interviews, which, you know, guys, track them down on uprocks.com and on huffingtonpost.com. You'll find a lot of really good interviews with Rachel Bloom and the other person, Aline, what's her name, McKenna. She's really good. I forgot her middle name, sorry, like Bruce or something, I think. They were talking about that the phrase crazy ex-girlfriend has always had that kind of a cliched stereotype when you hear it, you know. I don't remember their actual words, so I'm just going to come up and paraphrase. You know, kind of like a fatal attraction kind of idea, you know, the I will not be ignored, psycho stalker, revenge obsessed sort of nut job, which that hadn't been the case for the first two seasons, really. But now we see this character, Rebecca, has been pushed there, but they've done that in a way, they've built that over two seasons, so there's considerably more understanding and credibility than that trope would usually indicate, I think.
Right, and we also come to find out that this is not the first time that Rebecca's been left because of Robert.
But the thing that's interesting is that, well, when she starts rattling them off, that's her one of her issues is she keeps being left.
Mm-hmm.
Robert wasn't the first one to leave her. Her father is the first one to leave her, and that's what sets everything in motion. And then the Robert thing is what sets her down a much darker path, which is, wow. It's I don't think we were expecting that to happen, but it was really something that I thought was pretty powerful.
Mm-hmm.
To be specific, just to fill it in, you know, because it turns out that when she was first at Harvard, she got involved with a married man, a professor. Clearly, she's in love with the guy, believed he was going to divorce his wife. And then things apparently go badly. They break up, and this sets her off. And I know this is a good thing about watching it a second time. When I watched the first time, I just assumed she was setting fire in her dorm. But I think she was actually setting fire in his place.
Yeah, in his house.
Yeah, so which might be a touch worse. So this is what ends up getting her not only kicked out of Harvard, but we actually find out that she ends up spending an undisclosed period of time in a mental facility.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that and was... Go on.
I said, I'm not guessing that's why she ends up going to Yale.
Well, yeah. That's.
But think about this, is that she spends all her time wearing a Harvard shirt, not a Yale shirt.
That's also indicative that she hasn't gotten over it.
Exactly.
Right.
Now go ahead with what you're going to say.
Well, I just thought it was interesting because this is really huge, and there's nothing funny about this.
Not a bit.
And it's a reminder that although we've talked about the show and it's considered a musical comedy, it can unexpectedly hit you with some really powerful dramatic moments as well. And I think that was really one of them. It's very interesting that when you see her, and that flash when you see her in a mental facility taking her meds and you overhear one of the nurses or whatever say something. See, she sings to herself all day. No one knows why.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that. I had that moment. I had that moment when I heard that. I said, I hope they're not going to like make me think that this entire show has just been in this woman's head and she's in a mental facility. And I don't think that's what they're going to do, but if you think about it, they just drop something there, which kind of gives that it's a wacky theory, but it actually gives it some credibility since they tell you that right there, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it's something that's been done before in other shows, like Buffy's done it before. And what's that one by Scorsese, Shutter Island? It's been done that way as well. And I guess they put it in there just in case the show was not renewed for a third season, that they could have it as a season finale. It's like, that's it. Well, it's just a way to make you think.
Right. Well, absolutely. But just about just getting back to her character in general and about all, everything that happens by the end of this. Because now when you see what Josh has done, and then you get the little, you get the flashback of what happened at Harvard. And when you even, and especially when you're listening to her rattle off from what happened with her father, who turns out to be just as much of a scumbag as he was, you know, 14 years ago or whatever it was, or even longer, to Robert, to even Greg, because Greg left her too, you know?
Yep.
What's really interesting is, you know, when this show started, we were following someone that we already knew was maybe not completely mentally stable. And, you know, and she, you know, goes cross country to follow, you know, a camp crush from when, from her childhood, you know, not the most healthy thing to do. But we still found her, you know, she's like likable and rootable and all that other kind of stuff. And she still continues to be that way, of course. But by the time we get to this point, she's become something else. And it's funny because it even reminds me of one of the great songs from the show from I think it was from the first season, because in a weird way, she's kind of the, her motivations are kind of now becoming what you normally would see in an antagonist. You know, she, mm-hmm. the villain, so to speak.
The villain in her own story.
Right. She's a villain in her own story, but you needed to go through these two seasons, like I said before, to get here so that we're going to empathize with her. We're going to be siding with her, even if we know everything she's doing. It's not as bad as before. Before it was about true love. Now it's about revenge. Now it's about,
right.
you know, getting this guy to get his comeuppance. You know what it made me think of in a weird way? It's funny you mentioned Buffy. I'll go with a different Joss Whedon thing. It reminds me a little bit of Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog. Have you seen that? Please tell me you've seen that.
I think I saw it once.
Okay, go. You should see it again. It's like three episodes that are like 15 minutes each, so it's not much of a time commitment. But for anyone who hasn't seen that, go track it down online. It's really worth seeing. And the concept is it stars Neil Patrick Harris as Dr. Horrible, and he's like a classic, you know, goofy mad scientist, superhero villain, supervillain type, whatever. But the entire story is told from his perspective about, you know, his life and the girl that he has a crush on and how the hero, the superhero in town is a real dick, and he actually is a real dick. But by the way they pull that show off, by spending time and seeing the backstory of someone who'd normally be a one-dimensional villain, not only do you end up understanding him, you're rooting for him. You're not rooting for the superhero in that show. And that's what I think they've done here. Like, we're going to be rooting for her. No, I don't think anyone's going to be siding with Josh on this one. It's just interesting to see how far they'll be able to push it. Because if you, at the end of this episode, Paula says, oh, you know, we'll toilet paper his house or key his car. And Rebecca's like, no, that's not. It's going to be much, much, much worse. And then, again, remember, she's saying she's going to do that to a guy who's joining the priesthood. So it's not like you can do something to like his next person he's dating or anything like that. So it's, I thought that was kind of a really interesting way to look at it.
Yeah. And it's funny that to bring up the villain in her own story is that one of the songs actually starts out where that she's the hero, that she's turned into the hero right before he leaves her.
Right. Well, I think in that final song, I guess she does when she's walking around the area where she's going to get married. If I'm not mistaken, a lot of the lyrics in that song are actually pieces of other, or if not pieces of other songs, they're nods to other songs. Like that one, and it even ends with "I'll never have problems again," which is, you know, the thing about not having problems from a few episodes ago.
Right.
So I think it's like, yeah. I think I read somewhere it's like three or four or five different songs that they kind of reference in that one song.
I quickly looked it up. It's from "You Stupid Bitch." I'm the villain in my own story. I love my daughter, but not in a creepy way, and we'll never have problems again.
There you go. Look at that. I didn't even look it up. Oh, can I, oh, just to follow, because there's one note I actually did have written down to go along with my rambling a few moments ago. I just love the idea that if I'm going to look at her as an anti-hero now, that I get to put Rebecca Bunch's name in my mind right alongside people like Tony Soprano and Don Draper and Walter White. I just think that's really funny. It's like, you know, they're not really doing a good thing, but we're rooting for them. It's strange.
Let's see how dark she gets next year.
That's, yeah.
And the fact that Paula's okay with it too. I mean, she's already on board with it.
Well, what was done here is pretty, I mean, it is horrible to leave someone at the altar or figuratively leave them at the altar the way this went down. I mean,
he never said anything to her. She found out some other way.
It's ridiculous. You know, he just kept driving. The eagle never landed. Mm-hmm. A couple other things that were really, I think, there's a lot of things that are notable in this episode, of course. I mean, I love the metal riff that they do about, you know, The Rush to Be a Bride, which is a song that you guys heard a few moments ago to open up this segment. It's really funny. Especially, that was when I did put the captioning on to really enjoy the lyrics that much more, but hopefully you guys were able to hear it on the podcast. But I thought that was really one of their more ingenious ones that I never saw coming. So I really enjoyed that a lot. You know, there's another thing that's in the episode, getting back to more about Rebecca and her persona and her mental issues. There's that scene that happens when she goes with her father when they go into with the dance instructor.
You know, yes.
Because she wants to, you know, practice for the father-daughter dance. And when the dance instructor is initially confused and thinks that they're the couple.
Uh-huh.
And Rebecca's extended reaction to that, and one of the things you realize that, yeah, because all the men, and a lot of it's about replacing her father. It's the father figure situation. It's the man who abandoned her kind of a situation. It's the, and then the therapist kind of says it in their conversation later on, that she is always attracted to and pursues men who don't fully love her back, who have, you know, who abandon her constantly, whatever. But I think that scene with the dance instructor in that moment was like kind of hitting the nail on the head right there. It's like, bang, yeah, that's where it all started. This is the pattern you've been repeating your entire life. Because the interesting thing with Rebecca is, remember how completely almost nut job delusional she was like the first half of season one, and how they started easing her off of that bit by bit.
Right.
The way she is about her father, at least for a good chunk of this episode, like I said before, I think goes well beyond her delusions as far as Josh was concerned.
Right. I mean, she bought him 14 Father's Day cards in a mug that says "World's Greatest Dad." I think that's what she did. And then that's when he asks her for money, and she just looks crushed when did I get that right? Or is that no. When she gives him the money? That's when she gives him the money. Yeah.
Earlier he asks her for money. And at that point is when she's again on the verge of maybe finally having a breakthrough, because she goes to her therapist. She looks like she's been destroyed. And the therapist is, you know, feel like she can finally, you know, finally make some forward progression and finally, you know, move on and realize right. It. And then, but instead, and that's when Rebecca has another one of the an actual dissociative episode where the therapist actually calls her on it.
Mm-hmm.
That just happened, and by the way, this is the first time we're aware that that's what's been going on, which may to some extent explain some musical numbers, since as we heard in that flashback, whatever. But the thing about that is that also tells us she's got a lot. Her issues are a lot bigger than we might have originally thought. It's funny when in that flashback set, it's the only moment that's even remotely amusing, and yet it's not in the flashback later on, is when she's in court and they talk about her needing help, and she mentions that but she doesn't have any underlying issues.
Right. Straight from the theme song.
Right. But it's the one time that's not, it's actually, it's not funny really, the more you think about it, because it's like you realize she really does. because this is a lot more than just a girl who couldn't get over a guy and then just was acting obsessively about him. There's so much more going on here. I think you had mentioned on a previous podcast that maybe a lot of this is because she stopped taking her meds.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, she stopped taking her meds. I think that happened when she got to West Covina. I mean, she had that going way back to the beginning. I mean, this even had a call back to the beginning where she wrote a text to her dad, a lot like how she wrote a text to Josh.
Right.
Right down to the, we'll have dinner, and erase it, and breakfast, whatevs.
So here's a question then, based on what I was saying. If the show starts out with after she runs into Josh in New York and she makes that decision, and she also, roughly around the same time or when she shows up there or beforehand, whatever, she stops taking her medication. She gets rid of it.
Yep.
Should we then conclude, based on what we see in the flashback also, that they're almost saying by her getting rid of her medications, that's explaining why we're seeing all these musical numbers in her mind. Why this story is being told that way. Even though there are a lot of scenes that have nothing to do with her, but you can just say, but this could all be, again, it goes back to, it's all in Rebecca's head. I know maybe I'm getting a little crazy with that, but.
No, it's not crazy at all, because the show opens after she's at the camp. It opens with her in a shot in New York City where she's getting out of bed. She puts a pill in her mouth.
Right.
And then she goes to work.
Yeah, and there's no singing in New York. You know, it's
right.
It's actually
not until she gets to California, and when she steps out of the taxi, that's when they do the West Covina song.
Oh, by the way, actually, when I was looking for all the different clips to use in the podcast, I actually ended up sitting and watching the whole original West Covina song, and I marveled about how good it was, which I didn't remember thinking it was that good when I saw it the first time, and now I'm watching it. Wow, the whole Welcome to West Covina number that opened the show is great. It's long, but it's really good.
It's fantastic. It is one of those Broadway style things that they have done from time to time.
Oh yeah, it's something that could have been out of like a great 50s MGM musical or something like that. So what else really caught your eye or ear as far as the finale was concerned that we haven't covered as of yet? Because I feel like there's probably a few other things we could talk about here.
One thing we didn't see is we didn't see Greg come back. I mean, not that he would come back, Josh was his friend. I mean, it's possible he could have come back for the wedding, but then again, it was a shit show, as I said.
In one of those interviews, at least one of those interviews I read, that was addressed, and they felt it wouldn't have been right for Greg to come back for his character, because Greg made a decision to move on with his life, and that was what him leaving did, and that's why they gave him that great number and that song that really wrapped it all up for him. Doing that might have just thrown things off. It didn't feel like it would have been true to what they were trying to achieve with that storyline.
Yeah, and once we saw the episode was going, Greg would have stuck out like a sore thumb.
Yeah. I mean, the idea is that's one of the reasons Greg is also listed at the end of just being one more example of someone who left her, someone that wasn't right for her. Whether it's what the therapist is saying to her earlier, or slightly early on, or when she rattles it all off herself, he is one of those people. So that's another reason it really wouldn't have worked for him to be there. It would have been a bit, because then he might have had some of the vitriol directed at him when it should have been solely at her father in that scene.
Right. Also, in this episode, do we see the first cracks of White Josh and Daryl and their relationship, where White Josh is totally negative against people being together forever, and Daryl seems a little taken aback by that?
Well, he's against marriage. He's not against people being together forever. He's just against the institution of marriage. So that's two different things. So I wouldn't interpret it that way. I think that's not fair. Because why? Because he also says he understands why people have kids,
mm-hmm.
but he doesn't understand why people have to get married. it's the Goldie Hawn, Kurt Russell way of looking at things.
Right.
People who've been together for 30, 40 years, had kids but never got married, or other couples like that. But that's why you get the whole thing at the end where Daryl comes up with the brilliant idea that, oh, they should have a baby. And then you have that look on White Josh's face. I'm like, cause I'm like, dude, how long have we been together right now? That's, we're
not
we're,
long enough.
Yeah, we're guys. We have a lot of time. Our boys are going to be jumping for as long as we want them to be, or swimming, I should say, rather.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And usually, if something like that happens, that's a danger sign, because that's someone wanting to tie someone up without, without really going through the process of getting to know someone.
Yeah, I guess it's strange, because I'll be interested to see how they deal with that next season, because Daryl has these insecurities and slight paranoid insecurities, be it with friendships or relationships, and he's doing that here, and he doesn't need to, he doesn't have to, and he's almost, in a way, it's almost like a form of self-sabotage.
Right.
So, because there is nothing wrong in their relationship. There's no stagnance. There's no reason to do that. And he already has a perfectly lovely little daughter, who has accepted White Josh and vice versa. And they clearly get along like a tent on fire, whatever. That's not the phrase, but you know what I mean? what the hell does tent on fire mean? So it doesn't really make a lot of sense, but we'll see. It's normally on TV shows that when I hear that they're going to do something where it might involve someone having a kid, I start going, oh God, don't go down that road. I'm kind of curious how they're going to play this out with these two and whether it'll actually do that. And I mean, I think we're assuming they're not going to go down that road, that he won't want to do it, but I don't know. They surprised it with the whole priest thing, so who knows?
Yeah, I'm hoping they don't do it either. Seems a little forced on that part.
It seems forced because it's too soon, because these two haven't been together that long, and I feel like that will be what would have to be addressed in a conversation we would see in the next season. Now, Daryl might be able to come up with a whole bunch of reasons why, but Daryl is considerably older than White Josh, and maybe he'd rather have another kid now than 5-7 years from now, whatever. I'm just making up numbers here, because he doesn't want to be raising a kid when he's in his 60s or something like that. I don't know. I don't really know how old we're supposed to think Daryl is, quite frankly. So we'll see. It's more one of your more minor subplots for the show, but it'll be curious to see what they do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Was there anything else that really struck your fancy about the episode?
Not that I could think of. I mean, we covered a lot of ground. We covered, I think, more time on this than the other two.
Well, it's the season finale. You're supposed to spend more time on the finale than the previous ones. I just want to say, it's just, this was, for me, in a lot of ways, it was a real tour de force for Rachel Bloom, acting-wise. I thought she had a lot of great moments on the show, both comically, but much more so dramatically speaking. But not just the flashbacks, when she's with the therapist, when she's so sadly delusional. And it's also, and I've given him a little bit of crap here and there, it's a stronger episode for the actor who plays Josh. Vincent, what's his last name? Is that Vincent Hernandez?
I can't think of it.
Yeah, we're really bad podcasters. Sorry. Someone who's on this.
Sorry, Josh.
Yeah. Why don't you look that up instead of the other thing? look that up before we go off. It's horrible. We're talking about the show. We don't know the name of the actor who plays the male lead. No. I know it's Vincent something. Now, people who are fans of the show are yelling at their iPods right now, going, "It's Vincent, blah, blah, blah. How do you know?"
Rodriguez.
What did I say? Hernandez? Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I was, it was one of those Dez's, Oh, you know what we didn't mention? Just a silly thing. I love the ever increasingly creepy stuff with Hector. and his mom. When he's talking at when he stands up and is talking at when they're at home plate, and he acts like, "You guys are weird," and you're like, "We're weird." It just gets so much more bizarre. Yeah, that's
one of the things this show does well, which is even take the side characters and just adds a little bit to them every single episode that they appear in.
Oh yeah, I like that these little characters in all three episodes and the season as a whole, they all have these little moments to shine. I mean, Weeder be the George guy, of course, but who's just basically a running gag. But you know, Maya has these little moments that are nice. You know, I like
Karen. Karen with Long John Slither.
Yeah, and
that cracks me up.
And the whole ending that episode with her talking to her to the guy she's engaged to who's in prison was really funny. Because and when you realize what she's saying, sounds like she's also talking about Rebecca's issue about choosing between one person and a snake, and that could be like Rebecca choosing between Josh and Nathaniel based on that episode in a weird way. So it was an interesting little parallel. I'm sure it was intentional. Of course it was intentional. But I just enjoy a lot of the stuff that they sprinkle throughout these episodes. Much like the magic dust that the stupid devil winds blows around. Probably the only one I didn't care for. But and he's really mean to her in that episode too. Anyway, going wrong episode. So what I really enjoyed overall is like this was, as we said in our previous podcast, it was a shorter season. But I thought they really maximized what they could do here. So, I mean, I don't really think there was much in the way of filler. I mean, there was a time or two where maybe it felt a little padded, but, you know, this isn't like a strict, it's not a drama, so they can get away with it here. But it did leave me wanting more. I kind of wished we had at least another three or four episodes of the show. But I think it was really solid. I don't think it really... There was a real big letdown from the first season. I mean, I know it sucked not to have Greg, but characters do need to evolve and move on, so I'm okay with that because it made the show have to keep moving in a different direction.
Mm-hmm. Plus, it does give him a chance to bring him back later on whenever they want.
Yeah.
If the actor wants to.
Right. Exactly.
I thought this season was a whole lot better than the first season, as these TV shows tend to do. They get more, they find their footing more with the characters, and the characters grow. They finally get on track. There's a big narrative going on. Isn't it true that like most second seasons of shows are better than the first? It's like, I like going back and watching shows, like watching their first episode and compared to others, to the rest of the seasons. And you're like, wow,
it's hard.
What a change.
It's hard to say because unfortunately as all the shows I'm thinking of, that's not the case. Like, I don't want to step on your point because I do think you have to. It depends on the show because you also have what's called the sophomore slump, where mm-hmm. a show takes a dip in its second season, or some shows just build on it, as you were saying. I mean, there were like Buffy, for example. Yes, the second season is far better, a million times better than the first season. You know,
yeah.
But there are people who would say like a show like Lost. They think the first season is way better than the second season because the second season started to lose some people, whatever. I personally don't agree with that, but I understand that point of view. You know, how do you rate The Wire? Are we going to say the
wow?
Are you going to say the Dock Worker season is better than the first season? Probably not, even though we like it.
No, you can't because every season is so different.
Right.
And if you're going to put them on a scale, I mean, what is the worst season of The Wire? It's hard to say. Yeah, I mean, you would say the last season because I think some characters act out of turn. But
we're not gonna.
we've talked about that before.
That's how you end up a 2-hour podcast, and we're not talking about that show here. But I get what you're saying. But stereotypically, if a show is tends to try to find its way during its first season, and then builds on that for its second season, of course. You know, truly great shows, maybe they get it right the first season or things mm-hmm. are okay. But, you know, obviously, you know, what to add to your point, like the second season of Justified is a lot better than its first season, or the second season of Parks and Recreation is a lot better than its first season. It's one of those, the risk of whenever you start using the whole, and I've done this myself on a previous podcast, you'll always be able to find examples that work against you. You know,
right?
Like I'm the guy who says, I think for most TV shows, the fourth season always seems to be the best one. And then I can think of ones where, well, the fourth season of Buffy is clearly not the best one. It's like, oh, shut up. You know, so, the fourth season of Angel is the worst. Oh, shut up. All right. It doesn't work. But, you know, so it's always hard to have that kind of to make that kind of blanket statement. But it's fun to do it anyway, because it's always fun to see if you come up with more examples or not. All right. I kind of wanted to move on from talking about the season, and which we obviously both enjoyed, and we're looking forward to the next season, and we're looking forward to what that new theme song is going to be. I know they're still working on it. I'm kind of considering how her character is going to be seeking revenge.
I think it's going to be dark, right?
But I think what they'll do, just like these first two songs, is I think lyrically it could be dark, but it'll be presented in a very light, poppy way. Because I do not think it'll have a dark. I don't think the tone of the song will actually be dark. It'll be as fun as the first two. But lyrically, it'll be like, ooh, did she just? Did she just say what I think she said?
Mm-hmm. I hope they work the lyrics of the third theme song into the third season somehow.
Oh, I'm sure they will. I mean, that's what they do. So, what I wanted to do before we, you know, got to the point of wrapping things up, since one of the things we talk about a lot on this show, on our podcast about the show, is our love of a lot of the great musical numbers that they've done. So now that we've gotten to the end of the season, I thought it might be cool if we both talked about what our favorite, you know, picked our favorite song from the season. So I'll let you go first.
Well, mine is pretty easy. I've put this on my own personal Facebook page, and I think you even mentioned this during the first podcast we did, because it comes from the first half of the season, and that's Greg's drinking song. And all I've got to say to that is, Dan, play my clip.
Yeah. Gather ye round, and I'll tell you a tale of all the great times I've had with an ale. There's joy and there's glory, more than you can think. Yes, this is what happens to me when I drink. I pee my pants, my pants. I pee my pants. I get up from the bar to find pee on my pants. I say it's water, but all it takes is a glance for people to realize I peed my pants.
Wow, I did not know it was that bad.
Yes, wine can be fun, white rosé and red, till I call up my boss, say I wish he was dead. Chase down the regret with some gin for good luck, then steal my cousin Jim's landscaping truck. Drive home then, I puke on my cat, I puke on my cat. I fall through the doorway and puke on my cat. Poor little Bruno did not expect that. I try for the toilet, but puke on my cat. While some can enjoy a scotch with a steak, or one glass of wine, then they're barely awake. For me, it's much different. What happens when I try to have one? It just turns into 10. And then I fly a plane, a plane, I fly a plane. I knock on the cockpit shouting, I'll fly this plane. We emergency landed, the TSA came. Now I'm banned from Southwest cause I try to fly planes. Everybody!
He has sex with a bush, he has sex with a bush.
That wasn't a woman?
No, it was a bush, it had twigs and leaves, cause it was a bush.
That's where that scar comes from.
From sexing a bush, but he's breaking the cycle and making a push. He's quitting his drinking and saving his pants and his cat and Southwest and Jim's truck.
And my car.
My car too.
And the bush.
It's hard to beat that one. That's a real fun one. I watched that when I got that clip earlier. So that's I forgot how disgusting that song is actually. I guess it's my turn then. All right.
It is your turn.
All right.
Well, do you have something more disgusting in mind?
Well, I'm going to cheat a little bit here because actually a couple of my favorite tunes have already been played on our previous podcasts. So I feel like I don't want to use them as a result. So I can't use We Tap That Ass. And I couldn't use Who's the New Guy. And I couldn't use Remember That We Suffered because those were all used in our previous podcasts. But there is another truly great song number from this season, but I'm going to use that for our closing music for the podcast. So I couldn't use that one either. So that didn't leave me with a lot. But then I thought about it. I said, you know, there is that one song that was teased in not one, not two, but three separate episodes of this show. Something we actually spliced those all three of those moments into our previous podcast. So yeah, I know that this was only released online, but, you know, my show, my rules. So my pick is going to be the long-awaited release of Period Sex.
You mean it's not Duh?
For months now, everyone's been stopping the music video Period Sex from happening.
Period Sex. Oh, my God.
Period Sex.
Okay, so.
But the joke's on them.
What just happened?
Because now, they're all in the music video Period Sex.
Period sex, period sex. Put down a towel, pot it till it's dry with some
period sex.
Period sex, think of it as just Mother Nature's juice cleanse.
Period sex.
Period sex, it's a little gross, but I'm less likely to get pregnant during
period sex.
Period sex, it must be summer, cause we're gonna slip and slide into some
period sex. Period sex,
if you're grossed out, let's pretend it's cherry lube. Period sex.
Period sex.
It's not weird, it's just another kind of lip gloss.
Period
sex.
Period sex, you don't get to say, let me just put it in your butt. Are those sheets expensive? I'll Venmo you back for your sheets. I hope you can get those sheets again, and that the particular type of brand
hasn't been discontinued on Macy's.com.
Period sex.
Yeah, once they released that, I realized there's no way we can't have that in the podcast. I mean, I thought about making it the end, and I said, nah, I'm going to put it here. Because I loved all the little bits that we were getting of it throughout the season, as did pretty much every other fan as well, I think. So, you still there, or did you go on accidental mute there, Jason?
No, I'm here. I'm
okay, there you go. All right, so I'm glad that we were able to get together one last time for this season of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I'm sorry that I didn't want to sing again this time around, Jason.
Oh, I promised everybody that we're going to sing. They're going to be so let down. All tens of our listeners.
I'm about to say, if you want to come up with something to sing, you know, you want to improv something right now, fine, I'll sing something. But
nah, it's okay.
You can sing the episode number if you like, or you can wait till after I do the little wrap up there.
You can wrap it up.
All right, let's wrap the sucker up. If you enjoyed this podcast, I think you'll enjoy our Facebook page as well. We're the Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can like the page and join the conversation about shows like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, as well as many, many others. You can also find us on iTunes pretty much the same way. Type in the Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can subscribe to our feed there, as well as rate and review us. And finally, you can follow us on Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. It's STVD as in Serious TV Drama. Now, Jason.
Thank you guys so much for listening to episode number 158 of the Serious TV Drama Podcast.
Oh my God, we've done 158 of these things. Oh my God.
Yes.
Yeah.
You've done three this week alone.
Yeah. And varying quality. Anyway. No, actually, they were both very good. Well, one was really good. The other one, you know, whatever. Okay, anyway, well, thank you so much for joining me tonight, Jason. And thank you guys out there for listening. I hope you enjoyed this podcast at least 1/100th as much as you enjoy the show, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. We certainly love it, and we look forward to talking about it next season.
Yeah, season 2 is on Netflix now. Yeah. Fast turnaround this year.
Came in handy when I needed to rewatch all three episodes. Like, so thank you, Netflix. Perfect timing.
Less than a week. I mean, oh, I'll take that back. 1 week, exactly, almost.
It's the new CW Netflix deal that whenever, I think all their shows, when they end a week later, they'll be on Netflix in their entirety. So,
fantastic. No more waiting two months.
There you go. Well, let's not drag this on any further because we're doing so well on time. So, again, thank you, Jason, and thanks to everyone out there for listening, and good night.
Good night.
What's a girl to do when she's stuck between men? It's like she's a Barbie with two perfect Kens. But wait, it just occurred to me. Maybe I can solve this with geometry. Yes, smarts can help this situation untangle. So professors, teach me the math of love triangles. Yay, time for book facts.
A triangle is a polygon with three edges and three vertices. Take the base times the height, cut that in half to find the area of the surfaces.
Uh-huh, I wasn't really listening, but I can see the center of the triangle is little old me. The math of love triangles isn't hard to learn.
You're not taking in what we're saying. We're a little bit concerned.
Yes, the math of love triangles is as simple as can be. Whichever Tom or Dick I might pick, the center of the triangle's little me.
Actually, a triangle has multiple centers. This triangle's scalene.
That's astute, so I need to decide which man's more acute.
Here's Pythagoras' theorem.
Will this help me choose? If not, I'll be swinging from a hypotenuse.
Let's take a look at what this line bisects.
Is that spelled B-I-S-E-X?
Those are good puns, but please pay attention.
Oh no, professors, am I facing suspension? Whee! A swing! It's literal suspension. The math of love triangles isn't hard to learn.
We're starting to suspect you don't sincerely want to know about triangles.
Yes, the math of love triangles is as simple as can be. I need to choose between men, but until then, the center of the triangle's little me. Is this a triangle?
No, that's a shoe.
Is this a triangle?
No, that's you.
So I'm a triangle?
What? No.
1, 2, 3, 6, 8, 3, go!
You don't seem to know how to count. We're sincerely worried about you.
Catch me!
You're ruining the number.
This angle's right.
Which angle's right?
No, not right, like correct.
Ooh, are you erect?
No, 90 degrees.
That's really erect. The math of love triangles is super duper fun.
We're tired of all your tangents. That's also a triangle pun.
Oh, thanks for teaching me man math. You all deserve a kiss.
Lady, we're all gay. We get nothing out of this.
Neither man will notice my learning disability. 'Cause the center of the triangle is Leo.